Good morning and welcome to the final Burning Platform of the year 2024. And what a year it has been. So we've assembled an all-star cast this morning, including Pumi Mashiko. Yes, there she is in all her glory, triumphant for the final episode this morning.
No kisses, Pumi, come on.
Except I haven't combed my hair. This is how, like, this year has got to come to an end. I'm at that place in the year. I'm not even combing my hair anymore. I'm just like, whatever.
And he's already muscled his way in, but Canthan Pillay is here. Very good to see you.
And great as always, Gareth, thank you for the coffee.
After a star appearance with Timothy Maurice the other day. And you've come back with your partner in crime on the Overton podcast, none other than Jonathan Witt. How are you?
Good morning.
You're good?
Well.
Excellent. Yes. Look at all of you. All right. So we got lots to talk about.
They're twinning. Look at them.
They're twinning in black. You're also in black. Sia's in black. I'm the only one who decided to go a little bit more summery. But it's okay. It's fine. I am in an extremely good mood about 2024. In fact, this year, as far as I'm concerned, is ending on the most optimistic note that any year has ended, just in terms of the world, the state of affairs of the world, the way that things are going.
We are so back.
Yeah,
only but your favorite one.
No. I'm talking about the fact that we've got a government that are just like doing as little as can possibly be done, and that nobody's really interested in reporting on them. Have you noticed how little there is about the government in the news? I mean, as long as you're not reading the mainstream media. And the less we have to know about them, the better. I want a government that are so boring, that are getting on with uninteresting, mundane and ineffective stuff in the background. And it feels to me like that's kind of what we've got. You've got Helen Ziller praising Tony Blair and saying she's going to read his books. What a stupid move. You've got Cyril Ramaphosa who said nothing and done nothing of any import for the last 5 months. It's great. What an awesome time to be alive. What an awesome time to be in South Africa and the world. Huh? Pumi, why are you glaring at me?
I don't know if it's all that awesome. If all those things are all that awesome.
You don't think so?
And then depression set in.
No, Pumi's going to do that, but I'm not going to let her.
No.
I will not let her. All right, so let's go to you because you were glaring at me and you have a different point of view here. So go on.
Let the guests, Gareth, let the gentleman over here, because I'll tell you what. I think that the world still is in a lot of turmoil, but it's not a bad thing. I don't think it's a bad thing. I think that with all of the various voting and all of the stuff that's happened all over the world in geopolitics over the past year, things have calibrated to a place where people must take responsibility for the governments that they have, for the things that are happening in their country, and people must like do the work. I think for a very long time, the world has been coasting. And now...
But hang on, do you mean do the work as in when activists say that and they do nothing? Or do you mean do the work as in build roads, hospitals, schools, fix things, make stuff work?
Well, we now have the way because we know how to 3D print guns. Can we be clear about that?
Yeah.
And what?
I mean, doing the work does
not... Say that again. Is that you're doing the work?
We now know how to 3D print guns.
And then?
Now, just imagine what this means now for people who have been disempowered around the world. So let's start with the UK. Let's take a look at Australia.
Those are the disempowered people?
Yes.
Those are the disempowered people.
They are.
Yeah. I've often said, okay, what gives me hope for our country is that Boers and Muslims have guns. And I'll say that over and over again.
That is the most depressing thing. I think we need less guns all around.
Fewer, not less.
All around.
So the one thing you will not find us praising on this show this morning, I should hope, is that a crazy person who the internet is going wild about because he happens to be just a little bit better looking than most assassins in history. This guy in New York, Luigi, I forget his brother's name. This guy goes out and shoots the United Healthcare CEO in New York. In broad daylight, in front of everybody, it's on camera.
Mm.
And there are people in the United States who are saying this is a good thing. They are actually happy about vigilante justice. And of course, nothing has changed in healthcare in the United States as a result of his demise. But this is the kind of sickness that has crept in to the body politic of certain people in
Sorry,
the world.
Gareth, I've got to interrupt and disagree immediately, because the one thing that people have noticed
is, you're very argumentative today,
is that approvals for United Health have now suddenly gone through the roof.
Oh.
Everyone who's been sitting for months on end, they're just seeing those approvals just flying off the shelf.
So it has actually made a difference.
Yes, it's made a huge difference.
Mm. Except capitalism will still work. So when the company suddenly realizes that, oh shit, we made all these approvals and lost $4 billion last year.
Oh, they're not going to lose $4
Now we're going to go back.
I'll crunch the numbers.
Their margins are not as fast.
But it does get to Pumi's point about people taking responsibility, because actually the world's not in turmoil at all. What's happening is that there are very clear lines. You can make a choice. You can be Helen Zille. And you can look back at Francis Fukuyama, the end of history.
Yeah.
And you can look back at Tony Blair and be like, what a great time.
All it was controlled and managed.
And we had all these governments dealing with these NGOs, and they were all running the world in such a great way. But what we realized in 2020 and in the years that followed that is that actually what's been happening is the world has been controlled in a very bad way by a bunch of idiots. And
who passed themselves off as experts.
Who passed themselves off as experts. And in fact, what is really an expert anymore? We cannot trust anything that calls themselves an expert. And that's an excellent thing. And so now people have a choice to make. And those choices are becoming clearer and clearer by the day. You can choose to be South Africa and to follow NHI and to collapse the economy, or you can choose to be Malay and you can in 1 year take a country in absolute squalor
and with a massive amount of deficit
and reverse not all of it, obviously, but you can reverse a lot of that, at least on the numbers.
So I think interest rates have come down to I think 4%, perhaps even 3%.
Yes, they're not paying. Their deficit has been for the year.
Those interest rates were something like 400% when he took over.
Yeah, so they're down to 3% per month, which is still a lot, but it's way less than a couple of.
But there's a chance for people in Argentina to actually have more money at the end of the year than they had at the beginning if they do nothing.
There's also going to be 4 years of a Trump administration going, oil and gas is good. Energy powers humanity. And then everyone
Someone
can choose.
Someone should tell Alan
You
Wendy.
Can choose. You can choose at the end of those 4 years.
Someone should tell Cyril, who's currently in Mpumalanga, unveiling his just energy.
And someone should tell the judge who ruled against coal power. Mm. The point is that the lines are going to be very clear in the next decade. It's going to be very clear. You can choose. You can choose. You can choose the climate death cult. You can choose this idea of the end of history and experts control everything, and Helen Zille knows better than you, and Cyril Ramaphosa knows better than you, and Patrice Motsepe knows better than you, and the head of the health organization of the world knows better than you, etc. Or it's going to be very clear that certain things drive prosperity and certain things don't. And the countries that choose the things that drive prosperity are going to prosper. And those who don't, aren't. And I think that's fantastic. And that's what's come out of 2024 for me.
Love it. I mean, thank you. You put it into better words than I could. But that's a good place to start. So we've had a hell of a year. I mean, we've forgotten that we had an election. And we at some point we had an election, Pums.
Have we forgotten? I don't think we've forgotten. And this too is one of the things that when I look back at this year, I'm particularly excited about, because we did have going into the elections a tumultuous time, and it's been crazy to watch it since. But what we are downplaying and not talking enough about is the fact that yet again we literally had an eventless transition from the last administration into this administration, whether we in this room like it or not. That's what it is. No. There was a transition that happened seamlessly. There was even as, and we love this in South Africa, fear mongering and kind of feeling like everything is going to come to shit if we don't like, and the fear mongering around whether the ANC would be able to walk away from the power if they lose, and the ANC did lose.
Mm.
in a big way.
Humiliating, some would say.
And still, we've moved on. You know, it was like, it wasn't even a speed bump. It really was seamless.
But it's taking stock of precisely those things that makes it such a great year. Because we tend to start off and remake our default position from where we think it was, having taken no consideration of the gains made before that. So if, for example, you've been driving a Skorokoro for 20 years and you suddenly get a slightly better car and you get a slightly better car in 2 years after that, and then 4 years after that, you're suddenly driving a sports car, Ferrari, with like all the bells and whistles, then you accept that the Ferrari is ground zero for you from there on. You forget that you were driving a Skorokoro before. And for like a long time, there are lots of countries in the world that have been driving Skorokoros. And I think that the people of those countries have decided also that now they must all suddenly drive sports cars. So both the people who are hugely optimistic and have unrealistic expectations of what are essentially just human institutions, and the people who think everything is screwed up and we must just shoot people in the street and we must just go crazy and have revolution everywhere, both are wrong. And there is a middle path to be walked.
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of South Africa and that election, the ANC lost humiliatingly, as you talk about. Pumi's correct. We had what everyone loves to call a peaceful transition of power. You know, these terms that come
January
from
the things 6th.
Like, yeah, the terminology that comes from the Atlantic Council, which is the CIA.
In our view, July 2021.
July 2021 was a lockdown riot. It had nothing to do with Jacob Zuma, but and we can get into it if you really want to, but it's history now. The reality is that you locked people up and you took their jobs away for 18 months, and then you threw a match on the gasoline and said, we're going to lock up Jacob, and you gave them an excuse. But the reality is, if those people had been gainfully employed, which they were before, and everyone had been moving normally past that macro, the reality is that wouldn't have happened. But anyway, point aside, the reality is that
it was a mostly peaceful ride.
Peaceful ride. but the reality is that we unfortunately had all those things. We had a humiliating defeat of the ANC. We had a peaceful transition of power. And unfortunately, I don't feel we're one of the countries that has chosen the right path still. We still have an ANC in power. I see no change. I see absolutely no change. Well, I see the DA signing off on 90 million rand for ICJ cases.
Agreed. And the big winner in this situation hasn't been the people of South Africa. It's actually been Cyril, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, he danced so cleverly around this whole government of national unity thing. And the only person who's benefited in an obvious way from it is him.
Yes, sir.
I hate to say, I told you.
He's not the only one. So Cyril comes to be not because of Cyril. Cyril didn't organize that. Corporate South Africa organized that. That's the power. And you know,
but they're enthralled to him.
Zuma likes to talk about third forces and those types of things. So does Julius, etc. And to an extent, they're right in regards to that. The reality is that there's a center of money in this country, and that in every country. Okay. And we're not the only one. America's the same problem. That's why Trump is hated, because there's a risk to big business, and that risk is placed by other people coming and eating their lunch.
So if it's not Cyril, I mean, are there individuals that we can point to here?
Well, guys, this is not a conspiracy theory. We had a finance minister for 3 days. Okay,
and
Des van Rooyen, and the reason we had a finance minister for 3 days, and this was openly stated at the time, was banking CEOs
and finance folks
who had Cyril's number picked up the phone. Sorry, not Cyril's number, Zuma's number at the time, picked up the phone and said to him, "Let us make ourselves very clear: you will not do this." Okay, and within a weekend, he did not do it. So the reality is that's where the real power is. So the reason why we still have an ANC government and we still have ANC policy, and every government document still has 2030 agenda, whatever that thing is, that horrible government, typical government logo. I mean, the Nats would be so proud. I mean, Favut must be like loving that shit, right? And the point is that the reason everything's still the same, the reason we're still careening down the socialist hellhole is because the corporate sector has gone, we like things the way they are.
Yeah, because we're
making money. Here in Stellenbosch, we enjoy things the way, just keep them roughly the way they are, because we make good money that way. Mm. And we'll keep it roughly stable. The rand, 18 for the dollar, 20 for the
dollar. Let's take the spaza shops out of the economy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I loved what you two said about the spaza shops, because you were the only podcast and the only news outlet, if I can say news outlet, that I discovered that told the truth about that story.
So can we talk about other positives? Yeah. 128% spike in the price of Bitcoin.
Yes.
All right. 128% year on year. All right. So that's absolutely fantastic.
A victory again against centralized power.
For me, and just over the past 4 weeks. Mm. Okay. From my Tesla shares.
You're a dollar billionaire now, aren't you?
My Tesla shares have gone through the friggin' roof because of the Trump dividend already.
Uh-huh.
And I think everyone who's got money in the U.S. markets is sitting back now and actually smiling. And that's fantastic.
Canton's bought 3/4 of the coast in South
Basically,
Africa.
Canton owns like half the Dow Jones. Yes.
And he's about to start drilling baby drill.
Frack That's baby very frack. Good.
Pums, you were going to say?
No. Well, speaking of Bitcoin,
yeah.
Guess who's hosting a big Bitcoin summit? Kenya and not South Africa. Yeah. Why? Mm. Because Kenya has taken the decision to actually think through what they want to do in this new developing world that's digitalized and have really put a lot of money in it. And one of the things that I really wish we could talk about a little bit is a little bit of blue sky thinking, because I think we do a lot of looking back and saying, oh, this sucks, wish we could have done this more. Is I would really love to hear that, given everything that's happened this year, where you think we can go to next? What does 2025 look like for South Africa?
So firstly, I want to debunk the whole thing about, you know, Kenya's push into Bitcoin being of any value. The pointer on Bitcoin.
Say that again. You want to debunk?
I want to debunk the idea of Kenya's push into Bitcoin having any value. The pointer on Bitcoin is that it eliminates government from the mix. And I promise you that if you look in terms of the net holdings of South Africans with Bitcoin versus the net holdings of Kenyans with Bitcoin, South Africans are going to outnumber the Kenyans just in terms of the sheer value of their holdings by something like 1,000%.
Followed by Zimbabweans.
Absolutely, without hesitation. So, you know, the idea that government has any role playing in the Bitcoin space, no. The best that government can do is do what Bukele did, which is to say that he's going to invest states' resources in Bitcoin. Putin has been saying exactly the same thing, which has resulted in...
That's not what I said, though. What I said is that they've laid the groundwork so that Kenyans can participate more fully. That's what I said. But, and that's what governments are supposed to do.
No, we've got Lula, which is doing that for us. We've got Vala, which is doing that for us. We can trade directly.
Do you have enough coffee over there? Can you just calm your damn ass down and listen to what it is that I'm saying, and don't think you're hearing what I'm saying? Hear what I'm saying. What I'm saying to you is that Kenya has made a strategic decision to make it possible for Kenyans to participate more fully by making access to internet better, by making the infrastructure available. The fact that South Africans, starting at a higher base than Kenyans, will have more value than the Kenyans. However, with enough time, there are more Kenyans that are going to participate in that world and that economy.
Kenya's economy is smaller than a Kurulenis, you know, we shouldn't even be paying attention.
Then South Africans. We sit here in South Africa today, my friend. We sit with half of South Africans living on less than $20 a day. 20 rand a day. Half of South Africans. We have 18 million South Africans who are living off government grants. And we have a government that is not doing anything to change that. Not anything. But
it's not government's job to change that.
It's government's job to lay the foundation.
No, it's government's job. Government's job is to get out of the way, which is exactly what Malay has
bullshit,
done.
Because Jonathan right here was saying our government is careening down a particular path because of the policies that they are making.
Because they interfere.
Government policy is important to ensure that you have a successful economy.
I think you're saying the same thing. I don't see it too differently. the reality is you're saying government needs to provide, use the word infrastructure. I think that's true. And I don't think Kanthan necessarily disagrees with that. Like, it's providing the infrastructure that so that things can flourish.
So we can have deliveries of goods.
For example, have accepted that government builds the roads. Mm-hmm. I know the libertarians get very upset about
and
that.
And runs the ports.
But the reality is the government builds the roads. I don't think they should run the ports personally. I don't think they should run much. But the point is there's certain things that they get to make decisions on because they sit at this very high level nationally overseeing everything. You and I agree that they should remove themselves from a lot. But if they were to turn around and say, well, you know, we've got this limit on how much money you can put out of the country every year. We're going to remove some of those limits, or we're going to change some of those limits. That's, for example, they could get out of the way. But that is a policy position which might help people. They could turn around and do what Bukele has done in terms of tax-free havens for if you're going to start a Bitcoin-type business, a crypto business, then you can do that with less sort of government interference. They could go down that route.
Why would they do that? Because I just saw from the Daily Investor yesterday, South Africa's latest tax statistics revealed that only 1,051 companies, 1,051 companies in the whole of South Africa pay 72.3% of all company income tax in the country. Because we've always been told that, oh, no, you know, personal income tax, although it's the biggest category, that's not really a true reflection of how the South African tax economy works. It's actually everybody who's paying VAT that keeps things going. It's not true.
If you take
individual personal income, and you take company tax, that's more than half of the total tax income that this government manages to rake in. Sorry, steal. I mean, force at gunpoint from our pockets before we even touch it. Sorry.
And 3D printing of guns is now a thing.
Right. So governments must watch out. But all tax is theft as far as I'm concerned. But let's just take this. 72.3% of all company tax paid by just 1,000 companies. Guarantee you that the people who run those companies are also responsible for most of the personal income tax paid in this country. So you're talking about...
I'll give you a
couple of thousand people who are keeping this entire ship afloat.
Yeah. But you know what sucks about that statistic is to say 1,000 companies and not say 1,000 companies out of how many?
Well, we know that that number came down drastically.
So, I would bet there was
at least 2,000 before the lockdown.
Yeah, so half.
I reckon because we know that in the first 4 months of lockdown, we lost 3,500 companies. Mm-hmm. And those statistics were accurate statistics at the time based on companies that were not only registered, but they were tax-paying businesses or VAT, more importantly, VAT paying, because that's how they calculate.
Do you think anyone's learned a lesson from that?
No, of course not. But here's the best part of that. Many of those companies may be people who run their business affairs through companies for tax reasons. Some of those people happen to be medical professionals, about a third of those 1,000 companies. Mm-hmm. Bring the NHI in and you're going to drop that number to 600.
Cool.
About a third are medical professional related, and then there's a whole bunch of supply companies to that because you need catering at hospitals, for example.
Yeah.
So that'll probably drop to about 400 under NHI. So good luck.
Is the NHI stopping catering at hospitals?
Yes. Please do go enjoy the food at any government hospital in comparison to a private one.
This is a valuable point being made here by Congo Christmas. I'm checking the comments here. He says...
Congo Christmas.
Yeah, he's become Congo Christmas. Government meddling, we're the only African country that doesn't have Starlink. Yes. Kanthan is right. Government must get out of the way.
Might I point out that that's a DA minister who's still making that decision. The DA minister who could today sign off on Starlink and refuses to. The DA ministers have been universally terrible in every single thing they've done so far if they were actual DA ministers. But fortunately, they're very good at becoming ANC ministers, so there's no issue.
He's right. I sent Dean McPherson the plans for fixing school toilets immediately after the elections, and because he said, please send it to me.
As laid out beautifully in your book, How to Fix Stuff.
We must frisk Canton when he arrives at the door and take every copy of the book from him again.
I wish that these stupid ministers who seem to be enjoying their roles there a little too much for my liking, especially if they didn't have them before. I'm speaking to you, DA. You should be reading this book, actually. It's not a very tough read, and I know some of you aren't that good at reading. So it's how many pages, Canton? You'd benefit enormously from just a quick... sojourn into
just about 200 pages. Next to nothing.
Yeah. Anyone can manage a 200-page book.
The other very fantastic thing with what's happened in the way that our cabinet has been constituted is it does give Canton an opportunity to stop flogging the book and if you want to reignite your purple party, because one of the things that we have seen with this past election and we've seen over the past couple of months is that there is an open space for a party that resonates with people, that wants to answer the questions that people have or some of the pain points, as it were, which is what we say in marketing, right? Yeah. If there is a party, and we also know that people are able, something we've been told for many, many years, that people are unwilling to vote for anybody other than the ANC. Because that's what the MK has shown us.
Okay, so I just want to respond to partly that, but it's in the comments because Carl's very upset that I'm saying the DA's done bugger all and he feels they've done tons in the time. So I just want to know, Carl, where is that? Because Communications Minister hasn't authorized Starlink. That's the biggest issue in front of the comms minister. The other big issue around the comms minister would be opening up all the networks so that multi-choice can't be screening people anymore, for example. Hasn't done that. We've got an education minister who did bugger all, had to be pushed by organizations like Solidaritate and AfriForum to get the Bella Bill off the table, which is not off the table, by the way. There are just certain aspects of it which are off the table. But that wasn't her that did that. She was forced to do that. They had their hand forced.
Yeah.
They were threatened politically.
Strong-armed.
Basically. So that's what happened with her. It remains to be seen in January, February, what goes on with schools in terms of whether she's actually organized anything better than the ANC government. Okay, if she does, I'll give her kudos on the Overton pod when that happens. Then we've got environmental affairs, Dr. George, who believes in wholly in climate change, wants to stop us from using...
We need to take this opportunity to draw attention to the inverted commas around...
Well done. You got a PhD on some subject no one gives a fuck about and call yourself a doctor. But when someone's choking at the movies, you wouldn't know how to do a Heimlich maneuver. So good luck to you. All right.
John, they learned that as the Heimlich maneuver.
Yes.
For politicians, of course. So we've got him who's bought wholly into the climate change agenda and is basically throttling the economy in the same way Barbara Creasy did.
Mm-hmm.
We had load shedding because of Barbara Creasy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, and the only reason we don't still have that is because of Ramaphosa. And then we've got, of course, John Steenhuisen.
And Tetonyati. Let's give him some credit.
I think it's because what we now have running Eskom is we have actual engineers who actually understand what electricity supply, and it's not Mtetonyati. I think Dan Marokane gets very little airplay. He's done a fucking fantastic job. So...
That's true, but the minister has to take off the reins. That's how that works. And there is a very good reason why Ramaphosa, for example, came in and said, sorry, Barbara, we don't care about emissions and the EU and the deal you made for 8 billion euros.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to run our power stations at 100%, and we don't care if there's a bit of pollution as a result because the country is dying. And then he said to his very competent engineers, guys, you now have free rein to give the country electricity. That was part of what happened. And so...
Yes, because people still think, I'm glad that you cleared that up, because people still think it's a great mystery that suddenly the electricity is back. And I do want to focus on the positive, and I want to go back to what Pumi asked us about earlier, which is like, how do we... how do we get that blue sky thinking for 2025 going? Because none of us believed at the beginning of 2024 that we would be sitting in a situation where we suddenly wouldn't have to worry about, despite the fact that poor Pumi did wake up in the dark this morning due to a local power failure, that we would be sitting in a country where there was again at least a dependable for the moment source of power. And you guys have spoken about this on your Overton pod about how important energy is and how no country will ever
be the only thing that matters. Actually,
no country will ever have economic prosperity without energy. So again, let's take the small wins. This has been a big win against a stupid minister and a stupid ideology.
100%.
And yet Barbara Creasy's still in government.
She is. She is indeed, although less destructive.
We had a shuffle.
But look.
A cabinet.
Oh yeah. By the way, we got to say that all those journalists who were crowing about how fantastic it was that they got the Minister of Justice moved to another portfolio.
Shame. It is their last little flex of power
because the journalists.
It was the only thing they've done this year, right? I mean, that's a great thing about 2024. The mainstream media is truly dying.
Oh yeah.
Just to give you context.
Out of context. DSTV's lost 800,000 subscribers. I mean, how cool is that?
Amazing. And MSNBC in the United States gets what they call a slashy, which is if you get less than 50,000 viewers for a show, they just put a slash in the column. So, which is normally they just cancel the shows.
Yeah, I think if you add up the downloads in audio and the views on this show, the burning platform that we get in a week, we have more people paying attention to this show than are watching Joy Reid on MSNBC.
Yeah, or most CNN shows as well.
Which is amazing. But
pretty much if you are getting more than 100,000 eyeballs on a YouTube platform, you are exceeding almost all the mainstream media platforms except pretty much Fox News.
That's amazing.
In the United States.
So congratulations.
And in the UK.
So well done to everybody in South African independent media. I saw Penwell ranked a whole lot of podcasts the other day. For some of them are entertainment shows, obviously, but there are a lot that contribute to the national dialogue and the discussion that we have. And I would certainly say that one I've been converted to recently is the one that you two do. It's lots of fun. So that's one to subscribe to, is the Overton Pod. And you talk about stuff. Sometimes you go down a car tangent, which lasts a good half hour. But it's still worthwhile. And one of these days, I'm going to find a way to get Jonathan Witt and Elon Musk to actually have an argument about internal combustion engines and electric vehicles. It will happen if I die trying.
You know, the sad thing is that, of course, Elon loves Tesla because he owns it, and Gates loves Porsche.
And you love Elon and you hate Gates.
It's completely backwards.
All right. So let's look at some other things that we should be happy about. I mean, you mentioned Millet. He really was. I was going to start the show with him this morning. And we, as usual, when the four of us get into a room, we got waylaid. But what Javier Milei has done in Argentina is, to some people, it seems miraculous, but it's actually just common sense. And it goes back to what Jonathan Witt was saying just a second ago about how countries have choices now. So let's look at some of the choices that could face us. And I'm extremely excited. I know this is going to get me more death threats, and I don't care. I'm extremely excited about the redrawing of the maps of the Middle East, which are occurring as we speak right now. I mean, Damascus is within a couple of hours' march of where Israel are currently on Mount Hebron, I think it is.
Hermon.
Yeah. Sorry, that's the Hebron's where Moses saw the promised land.
Well, as you can hear, Hermon, very Arabic name, of course, because there were no Jews around at the time.
But this is all very exciting. So we have Israel about to not just completely reinvent Lebanon, which would be exciting, and Gaza, which doesn't exist anymore. It's just a pile of fresh rubble.
I don't think Israel is interested in reinventing.
I think they should be. So I would love to see a return to the old ways of conquest. I know this is very unpopular.
Oh, my God.
But old ways of conquest. Yes, I like this. And I even had an argument with my father about this. He said to me, that is not what wars are for. Wars are not for territory. Well, actually, they kind of are. And Putin's proving that in the Donbass and in the Crimea.
Yeah, I'm 100% behind you.
Israel's proving in the Middle East.
So
and
I was
you know
saying
what?
Yesterday about Israel. Israel you got to win. Taken
you,
Syria. Got,
you know how you get peace? You win.
Yes. So Israel has taken a significant chunk of Syria, but more to the point, the first thing that
they
did.
And they should keep it.
Exactly. The first thing that they did was they took out 80% of the military capability of the Syrian defense force.
While the Syrians were having a sleep.
Yes. They took out 80% immediately
when ISIS going on in the country. In fact,
immediately when ISIS moved in, they took out 80% of the military capability.
I want to,
and now they've got the land.
We talked about good things. Now, objectively good things. The most amazing thing happened. We haven't given it enough attention this year. That whole thing with the walkie-talkies and the pagers was the most brilliant intelligence and military maneuver, the most targeted takedown of terrorists in human history. And I think it deserves like a little round of applause at the end of 2024, because if we could do that with more of the world's troublemakers, everything would be better for all the people.
It changed the geopolitical stage. That single event has led to a 7/10 changed the world and led to all of this. But that walkie-talkie thing and the pager thing led to the collapse of Hezbollah. And because of the collapse of Hezbollah, you've had what happened in Syria.
And the mask is off with Iran.
Yeah. So, and of course, you've got the American election to follow that. And the mullahs know essentially their funds are going to dry up. And so they're in a lot of trouble. And they're not investing their money now in every other country around themselves because they know there's trouble coming. So it's there's a lot of interesting stuff happening. I mean, I don't necessarily disagree with you on conquest. I think that you can try and change that. The problem is you can try to change that. But when we talk about history and we talk about the great leaders of history, they're all people who conquered things, right? And Napoleon is known because he conquered.
I know it's become terribly unpopular and uncool for people to go, somebody has to win and somebody has to lose, because everybody in the world right now gets participation medals. They all go to the UN and they all talk about absolute bullshit that no one cares about. No one's listening. The only important dynamic that has come back into politics, and it's staring people like that in the face, is that you are either the winner or the loser. And there isn't, like Thomas Sowell always says, there isn't a perfect solution to any problem. There are just trade-offs. And what we're seeing in the world right now is that the trade-offs favor the bold, and that the bold all over the world are starting to realize that they can take advantage wherever. And Putin's been doing this for a while, and everybody's, he's so mean, and he's so horrible, and he's so terrible. And yes, he is, all those things. But he's winning. And Zelensky has been humbled, and Trudeau went to go and have dinner at Mar-a-Lago the other day.
Did you see what Trump tweeted out?
And was told that he was maybe the governor of the 51st state. And he goes back to Canada and complains that, oh, well, they should have elected a woman. But here they are again with Donald Trump. And while he's wetting his tampons, nobody is listening to him anymore, because Justin Trudeau is unimportant and Donald Trump is important. And you can see it when they go to Notre Dame. And everybody's eyes are fixed on Donald Trump, just like
it's not about importance. It's about wielding power. The thing is good people and bad people can both wield power.
Oh, yeah.
Putin is the point of that. Putin is the bad guy who can wield power. Trump is the good guy, in some people's view, the good guy who can wield power. The reality is Obama could wield power. Okay, is another example of a inverted commas good guy, or some people's view bad guy, who can wield power. If you can wield power, then you can either conquer or you can keep status quo, because you can defend what you have.
But you have to do something with the power. And I'm saying one of the outputs of having power is sometimes conquest. And remember, this war was not started because Israel was sitting there bristling for a conquest war. This started because Iran and its proxies overplayed their hand. And now the chickens are coming home to roost. So I'm just saying, worthy of a little praise at the end of the year.
So I do think that the military prowess of what we saw with that pager incident is something that's going to be talked about and studied for a very long time. I think that, unfortunately, like a lot of military advances, it depends, as Jonathan says, in whose hands that power is. Because in the same way that the Israelis could use it in this way, terrorists can use it for their own ends, right? But also, you know, terrorists, it seems to me that the word terrorist is once again shifting sands.
Well,
you know, because when I look at what is happening today in Syria and who is being cheered on.
I'm not cheering them.
I keep asking myself, what the hell is happening
personally,
in the world?
I would have left Assad alone. If it were between, because I think
a balance of terror, right?
I would have left Gaddafi alone too.
I would have left Gaddafi alone, 100%.
And I would have left Saddam alone.
Hussein, with again, for another good example.
Yep. But just quickly, a big loser for this year, and I mean, I just have a personal gripe here because I was maligned for saying things about her. But Naledi Pandor, I mean, you backed the wrong horse, lady. Sorry, you have no dividends from your investment in your friends in the Middle East. I just want to point that out. I like to just rub a little salt in it.
Gareth, my understanding is that the dividends came in terms of money that was paid to the ANC to settle debts.
By a gift of the givers.
So I don't know about whether it was gift of the givers, but
And this is the thing about Cyril Ramaphosa that I keep wondering why people don't see this, right? Is people are disappointed in the president that he is, because they had a particular expectation that they placed on him, right? And they keep saying, why is this guy not doing anything? He's not making decisions, blah, blah, blah. But actually, Cyril is making decisions, guys. The difference is that the decisions he is making and the people who get dividends are him.
Yeah.
And his people. Mostly. So we may be looking at this and thinking, where's the fucking dividend? We're paying 95 million or whatever money was signed off now for this ICJ case, which was initially supposed to be paid for by friends of the case, and now we're paying for it. Right?
I just want to point out, we are not pixelating Pumi because we're trying to hide her identity. We're not pixelating Pumi because we're trying to disguise her in case she says something outrageous. It's because her camera is like something from the 90s by the looks of things.
Keeps shutting down.
I thought we did that because Pumi said her hair wasn't 100% today.
I also said I don't give a shit.
Even when you're pixelated, you're still the best looking in the room. That's not difficult in this room, though.
Can we talk about Oreshnik as something else?
Bring it on.
Well, you looked at this thing and the idea that you could actually end up with weapons of unimaginable power without needing to put a nuclear warhead onto it.
Right.
I think has, again, completely...
So just sub-intercontinental ballistic missile.
Well, this one just happens to be sub simply because of the fact that that happened to be what they fitted onto it.
This is like when they give you a license for a semi-automatic weapon, but you know someone who has a soldering machine.
No, can make it automatic.
Machine and can make it automatic. That's what that is.
Put a bump stock onto it. Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So Oreshnik basically, I think, has once again gotten us into a state of detente, because there is nothing that is going to force people to behave themselves as much as the fact that if you mess around, you have the ability to actually be seriously affected. And one of the issues that we've had up until now is that people basically stop being scared of nuclear weapons. Stupidest thing possible, but people are no longer scared of nuclear weapons. They actually believe it's possible to survive a nuclear war because they run numbers and they say, well, there'll be fallout here, but this city will be fine, and all of that kind of rubbish. Mm-mm. But now, for the first time, you've actually got a conventional weapon that's capable of flattening cities, and there's no known defense against
it. I think there's a broader...
And it's going to be a matter of time before everyone has access to these, and it's going to be the ultimate deterrence.
I think there's a broader point, which is that in some ways war is exceptional because it advances humanity. Every time we have a war, we learn things, and we don't only learn war things, but we learn other things. So medicine, for example, takes giant leaps every time we have a war. So our entire blood transfusion protocol towards patients now is different as a direct result of the Iraq war.
Triage is from the Napoleonic War.
So, but every time we have a war, we learn stuff. We also do that with technology. So technology takes great advances. So in war technology, what's happened now is drone technology has now taken a front seat. We've got these ballistic missiles. We've got hypersonic missiles that are now being developed.
I can't believe you're advocating for personal hypersonic missiles.
Every household should have their own hypersonic.
You're taking the U.S. Second Amendment to unbelievable degrees.
So, no, but the point is that the entire face of warfare has really been changed. I think that's going to be very interesting for the world and how that plays out. But so far, the way that's playing out is in a very positive way, which is what Canton's talking about.
But
huge cost.
At cost, but I do want to disagree with you on one point, is that war is not exceptional. In fact, war is the default position for all of human history. There are always wars, and they're usually wars of conquest, wars of resources, and internecine battles between factions, sometimes even just families, that result in unbelievable pain, disgrace.
Yeah. To be clear, I'm not advocating poverty. For
no,
war.
No. But it is the default position. No, I know that. You said it was exceptional, though, and we take leaps forward. The exception has been probably the period since certainly the end of World War II, and then probably you could say a different period that kicked in after the fall of the Berlin Wall.
Mm.
And those conflicts have been very localized since then. But I think that by and large, war is inevitable when human beings are competing for resources and women and, you know, space and all the rest of it. And we've had an unprecedented period, to Canton's point, of peace, which was brought about by victory. This is hugely important. The reason that we had peace after 1945 was because someone won. And the reason that we had a different setup, but included very much the idea of peace after 1989, was because a certain ideology won. We now see people trying to revive certain ideas, whether it's, you know, authoritarian, totalitarian fascism from pre-1945, or whether it's communism trying to make a resurgence, look, even if it's only in
to
academia.
That point, if the other side had won, we'd all be speaking German. Those of us who are allowed to live.
Well, poor old Jonathan would not be
here. You probably would not be.
I don't know if Pumi would have, frankly. I mean, I would have skated by, even though both my grandfathers fought the bastard. But, you know, I would have skated by if I'd suddenly learned to go Sieg Heil.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretended I could speak German from the beginning. I think that we've got to acknowledge that we've had this uninterrupted period of peace. It's made some of us soft, but you've got to be realistic about it.
It's actually made a lot of leaders soft.
Mm.
And by that, one of the places I think that is the softest point in terms of international law and the bodies that are supposed to be the places where these things are discussed before they become conflicts, the UN and Guterres. Right? We currently have an incredibly weak person at the top of that organization and not making enough hard decisions and definitely not doing the hard work. And as a result of that, we currently sit after many years of unprecedented peace, have the highest number of armed conflicts around the world.
The UN General Assembly is an irrelevant body. And I'm saying this over and over again. Mm-hmm. The only thing that matters is the UN Security Council. And I think that is going to be expanded. So there's going to have to be an African presence on the Security Council with a veto and an Indian presence. But that is the only body at the end of the day that matters. And the reason why it matters, it's to the point that they have the ability to wipe out the rest of the planet. Well, we don't yet, but
I don't think we used to, and then we gave it up for no reason, for no good reason.
No, we gave it up because we couldn't trust the ANC with it.
As per any period pre-1989, a call between the White House and the Kremlin supersedes anything that goes on that little piece of property.
The United Nations could disappear, including the Security Council, would make no difference. And the problem with the UN is that the entire concept of the League of Nations worked really well, because what the League of Nations was when it started was essentially NATO before NATO was bastardized. And it said, we as a group of nations all believe in the same things, the fundamental underpinnings of Western civilization. That was the idea.
No longer.
And then what they did was they said, oh, well, let's include all these African, Asian, Middle Eastern countries, because they're the world and we're the UN, and we'll give everyone an equal vote. And so now what you have is two-thirds of the organizations or countries that vote at the UN are countries that do not believe in the underpinnings of Western civilization. And so you have
it's a microcosm of what's happened in Europe.
Western civilization does not believe in the underpinnings of Western civilization.
And that would be fine.
That's right.
Because the world is constituted like that, right? If it wasn't for the fact that everybody is always trying to make everybody else be the way that they are, and this is the problem with conquest, right? It's perfectly all right to be different.
It is all right. It's not all right when those people dictate to others.
In the same way that it's not all right for the... Yeah, just as it is not all right for the West to dictate to the other people.
I 100% agree with you, which is why I don't like the Security Council, which gives America and the United Kingdom, which is a backwater at this point, unreasonable power over the rest of the world to push their Western ideas. But I do not like the General Assembly's ability to push backwards ideas on the West.
You're both right. But Pumi, you brought up international law. The real experts, and I know there are going to be loads of professors who will argue with me about this. I'm okay with arguing with professors. There is no such thing as international law.
Thank you, Gareth. I'm 100%
international law does not exist because sovereign states are the only a sovereign state is the maximum amount of jurisdiction which can be brought to bear against a certain number of rules and laws and norms and mores. And you don't get bigger than that.
Because it's like consensus, right? Well, all law is about a set of belief structures that are consensus within an environment.
We don't even agree.
Consensus until someone decides to break the law.
We don't even agree with Lesotho, all right? Lesotho is an absolute monarchy. And we are a democracy.
And which keeps threatening us with violence.
And they are completely surrounded by us, but they keep threatening us with violence. And we have done nothing to depose this terrible place that doesn't believe in democracy. I mean, you know, if we were Joe Biden, we'd be going in there to bring them democracy if they liked it or not.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we let King...
And female leadership.
Yeah, King Letsi do his thing.
Yeah.
And if there's anything that South Africa still has to give to the rest of the world is really an understanding of how you can be completely different people and learn to live next to each other. I think the idea of reconciliation and the idea of finding ways through the difficulty of being with each other the way that we do here in South Africa, better than anywhere else in the world.
If Boers and Muslims didn't have guns, that would not be the case. I will say it again.
Nobody is threatening.
The threat of violence is what keeps peace.
Yes.
Actually, that threat of violence, there are no Muslims coming into Soweto threatening Sowetans, right?
They protect their territory.
I'm not sure. What is their territory? What is Muslim territory?
I don't know. Hey, I mean, there are a lot of farmers who would disagree
wherever
with you.
They
may be armed, but they're not safe.
If you look back to the Zuma riots, for want of a better word, the reason why so many communities held firm is because people in those communities had firearms. And when the rioters came in, they were quietly turned back at gunpoint, but they were turned
those out. Communities, and this is the thing about South Africa, is those are not Muslim communities. Those are not communities.
I am going to say without hesitation that my fellow South Africans who happen to be Boers and Muslims are the single biggest purchasers of legal firearms in the country. And you go to an arms show at any given stage and you will see them there. They are firearm enthusiasts. They are highly competent in the use of those firearms. And God bless them.
And there are more and more. There are more and more Zulus also coming.
How wonderful it is to live in a country that allows that. How wonderful it is to live in a country that allows anybody, not just Boers and Muslims.
We all agree.
The country doesn't allow it. The firearms themselves create the situation where it is forced upon the people.
You're talking rubbish, man.
Yeah. We may not have a second amendment, but
it's
we,
a de facto separate.
It didn't need to be an amendment because it was built in.
Well, they have tried it repeatedly.
And I have to, I have to give credit to the NGOs, which I don't ever do, the ones that are fighting on the right side of this, the groups that have
done the ones that don't take foreign money,
and who are trying to protect the rights of legal firearm owners,
pretty much anyone on the right.
Listen, let's also say that those guys have lost a fortune. Those foreign NGOs that are putting money into South Africa have lost an absolute fortune and have gained very little for their expenditure. And I'm pretty sure that people like Alex Soros have turned off the taps for places like South Africa now. And it's right. And we don't want that kind of interference in our politics. And that's a good thing. The Chinese have made it a rule that you can't do it there. So maybe we should make it a rule that we can't do it here.
Remember that Soros has moved into our podcast space. So Sizwe Mpofu Walsh, for example, is now getting Open Society Foundation money.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think
you'll see a corresponding change in terms of the quality of guests that gets interviewed
and what he believes in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But he had Helen Ziller on the other day.
Exactly.
But like, and exactly. ZB coming up soon. Yeah.
But exactly.
Yeah,
it's the acceptable liberal view that's allowed. But the reality is that, as I've been saying for a long time, we should ban any foreign funding of NGOs which is not directly to a social cause and has any influence on politics. So in other words, if it pushes ideology in any way, so you can feed kids at a school, for example, you can have a soup kitchen, sure. You can help homeless people, but you may not sue the government because they removed homeless people from a building they took over in the center of Johannesburg, Helen Suzman Foundation. You may not do that because you are destroying our city.
I think it's fascinating that we spend so much time, especially today in this podcast, talking about how government should get out of the way. And now in the one area where they're not participating, you want them there, banning people, stopping things the way that they should be, creating regulation?
No, but actually government does participate because of the fact that they facilitate it. And there's this fascinating...
Yeah, but you're asking this for them to participate
this conversation
more.
Between Joe Rogan and Mike Bates.
Government law and order, unfortunately, Canton, just to interject, government's role for law and order is going to be their role. We don't get to do law and order, although South Africans have tried to take over that role. But unfortunately, even if someone breaks into your house and you have a security company, you still have to wait for the SAP to come and arrest them. Okay, if you do something to them, you're in trouble. The SAP can rough them up. So the reality shouldn't, but they can. The reality is that government must do law and order. So in Johannesburg, as an example, which I used, when government says law and order says you may not live 3,000 people in a building that is an office block for 300. Right,
because otherwise we have
with false partitions because it's a fire risk and a lot of people
and we have
could
those
die,
tragedies that we've had
right and those
times.
Tragedies happen and the same organizations that stopped the government from moving in and performing law and order activities stop them, then bemoan the fact that those people then die in those fires. These are our enemies. Okay, the reality is there has to be law and order, and yes, government is responsible for law and order. Every country in the world surrenders that power to a government.
John, your five-second interruption ended up being a monologue. So now let me get back to what I was saying. The single biggest thing that I need people to be paying attention to this year is the conversation between Joe Rogan and Mike Benz, where he was talking about the way in which...
By the way, left Joe Rogan completely...
Yeah, he was broken. Yeah. He was absolutely... Yeah. He was a broken man.
But the crucial thing was this fundamental recognition on the part of governments that government has money but no credibility. Academia and the media had credibility.
Had
credibility but no money. And so by transferring money from government coffers into the hands of academia and the media, they were then able to substantially influence the entire course of the world, not just of society in America, but around the world. And let's be very clear, that money filters through into our country in terms of what gets funded in academia, in terms of what gets funded in the media and the NGOs.
I found out through that podcast what USAID is. I always thought USAID was a kind of a, you know, charity organization that distributed medicine
from the U.S.
It's distributed medicine. And what a clever name. But it's actually their strategic international defense arm.
It's soft power.
And they are controlled from the CIA and the Pentagon. And their job is to actually exert soft power across places where they have no sovereignty and no right to do so. So when you drive past their building in Pretoria, you wonder, why is there a moat and fences and several booms, and it looks like a fortress, an actual fortress. And And yet there are buildings here which we know are military buildings within our own country that haven't got these sorts of defenses arrayed around them. It's unbelievable. That'll teach you lots of things, that podcast. Just one quick thing. I did like this comment from Gray. Gray said, can we just admit that Angela Merkel ruined Europe?
Yes.
Talk about Europe a little bit, because Europe's very much in the news at the moment. There's a lot going on there. Ooh. It's worthy of just a little reflection. What do you have to say?
I'm saying France.
France. And we won't talk about Brigitte Macron, but what do you have to say about what? That?
You got to love the French.
Yeah, they don't. Currently, he can't seem to put a government together. I mean, no. He's still going to the opening of Notre Dame and everything else, but he's not president.
He's president like Joe Biden's president.
Does Joe Biden know?
No, Joe Biden doesn't know much, except that he needs to protect his family from being pretty much arrested and imprisoned.
I think Jill signed that.
She may very well have. Look, Europe is interesting. We discussed this on the podcast before, but Europe is interesting because there's obviously a shift happening, and everyone is trying to prevent that shift from happening, but it's going to happen. And France is the first place you're seeing that. Germany will be the next place you will see that. The European Union is ultimately going to collapse, at least in the sense of a combined centralized government in Brussels. As a trading entity, it shouldn't collapse because it was a really good idea originally. Yeah. But other than that, it's going to fall to pieces. Europe's going to move to what the media calls the right, but really in Europe, that's just the center. There's nothing on the right in Europe. Even the AfD in Germany that everyone freaks out about, if you go read up about the AfD and what they talk about, they really are.
Yeah, but Europe's got PTSD.
Yeah, everything's Nazi, right? But that's what's happening in Europe. And Angela Merkel was the start of that. Again, this is back to the end of history. Francis Fukuyama, competent bureaucrats can run everything. The capable state that you've heard Helen Ziller talk about.
Well, all that you need to know about Angela Merkel and that moment that Fukuyama called the end of history at the fall of the Berlin Wall is that she was sitting in her apartment in East Berlin and didn't want to go and celebrate. That's all you need to know.
Because I choose joy this morning.
Sorry, Kamala, what's that?
I want to talk about.
Yes, joy. Go on.
The only thing I want to talk about comes to talking about Europe is I do want to talk about the triumph that was Priti Yende's performance at the opening of Notre Dame.
Hell yes.
Yeah, and, brilliant.
And I've also got to point out that some South Africans found reason even to disagree about that.
Why?
Not about her performance.
She was magnificent.
So she was magnificent. But I never do this, but I saw it was trending and I thought, great, because I watched her and I thought, what an incredible thing. And really, she was exceptional and it was just the most beautiful rendition of The Lord is My Shepherd. And it echoed in that magnificent building, which is over 1,000 years old. With
Amazing
just,
Grace.
It was just, Amazing Grace. I thought it was, anyway, when I went onto Twitter, which is a different kind of echoing to the echoing you'll get in Notre Dame, I saw people arguing about like whether or not people knew that Priti Yende was South African and whether they'd known about her before this performance.
They have been fans for years.
Yes, you were involved in that conversation somehow, I think.
No, I wasn't. I didn't join in because, you know, people are getting uptight saying, why haven't we heard about her until now? Well, actually, you know, we have heard about her, but classical music happens to be something
a niche that, concern.
It is a niche concern, and I'm very pleased about it. You know, ask them about hip hop, and they're pretty much going to know everyone who's a star around the world. But yes, it is an elitist thing, and I'm unashamedly there.
But can we talk about how we punch above our weight? Because I think maybe Pumi might be getting to that, and maybe she doesn't see it exactly in the same way I do. But we have Priti Yende. We had a good year at the Olympics.
Yes.
We have Swiss girls. We have girls in Switzerland dancing to Biri Marung.
I don't like the music personally, but I'm a piano is massive. So that's become huge. Someone like Black Coffee is probably the biggest DJ in the world, and then we have a Trump administration with three South Africans.
Who's the third one?
It's David Sacks, Elon Musk.
And oh, I'll remember just now. But,
Peter Thiel,
and then there's Peter Thiel as well.
Is he South African?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, really? Thiel has South African links as well. So the reality is you know, we are punching well above our weight, which we always have done. It's very interesting. There's something about South Africa. I don't know what it does that it cultivates
adversity.
Greatness.
It's adversity.
I think it probably has to be adversity.
Yeah. This is not an easy place to live, and every South African will tell you that. But somehow, we fuck forth. We make a plan, you know. And despite the fact that there is such enormous difference between us, we find more reasons to work together than we do to work.
The thing is if Elon Musk wasn't throwing down some stairs in four ways, you know. The reality is he's a genius still, so he probably still becomes successful, but he ends up in some room at a large company like Microsoft making software probably and never becomes, but now you can throw anything at him and the reality is his reference point is I got thrown down some stairs and had the shit beaten out
and
of
now
me
I
in
don't
four
like
ways.
Bullies.
And so and so you can never make it worse than that for me. That's how he views.
They
speak from personal experience.
And that was the single.
Well, they sterilized his child then, and that
Carl,
was.
Carl says that Peter Thiel was born in Germany, has no association with South Africa. So let's not claim people. Let's not claim people we don't have.
No, Carl, I'll fact check you later.
Mo Rabbit says we also won it, being the lowest scoring at maths and science in the world. So there's, you know, it's a win of a kind.
Let's see whether the DA is able to fix that.
And I do want to point out that Notre Dame, which is 1,000 years old, was rebuilt in less than a decade, and Parliament is still sitting there unoccupied.
But let's remember, a lot of these cathedrals actually took 400 years to build in the first place.
Well, so Parliament's going to take 400 years.
The Thiel family only moved to the States in the late 70s and lived in South Africa and Namibia until that point.
Yes.
So.
All right, well, we'll take it.
Yeah, okay. And so I don't need to fact check Carl anymore because John's done it.
Thank Grace you. Says that we should acknowledge the Springboks as a unifying force in South Africa. Absolutely good idea. There's Wit being a hypocrite again, says Yonder. there's Tyler, and there's Drickus, and there's the Box. Okay, well, we have lots and
well,
lots of reasons.
We can talk about Minilingam. We can talk about Roelof Botha. We could talk about Trevor Rabin. We could talk about Trevor Jones.
Yep.
So I hope that in 2025, all this amazingness that is bottled up inside South Africans can find a way to express itself in more jobs in South Africa. Because if anything, we should all be thinking about and talking about and coming up with solutions to is how do we get more South Africans working?
And 3D printing of guns is a thing, guys.
Keep saying this is a good thing.
Our solutions are right in front of us. We just refuse to access them. 250,000 jobs are accessible in oil and gas instantly, pretty much, if we just choose to drill and frack.
If Starlink were unleashed immediately, we'd have rural internet connectivity, which would allow people in those areas to actually start businesses. A whole range of things flow from that.
Okay, so three things just from that last couple of minutes. Starlink, unleash that. Buy your 3D printer for your gun now before they start regulating that.
Before Canton starts hoarding them and drill, selling them for Bitcoin
price. And drill, baby, drill. All right,
and
very
frack,
good.
Baby, frack.
And frack, baby, frack. I love
Canton
it.
Canton starts hoarding all
I'm
of
not opposed
3D
to all
printers.
Three of those. That's
and
so
but, selling them but for Gareth, Bitcoin. You know, just to end this on a kind of a high note.
Yeah, you brought champagne, didn't you?
I did bring champagne, and we'll crack that shortly after this. But
Canton's very rich now, thanks to his Bitcoin.
It's Moe. He brought Moe.
Yeah. He brought that Ace of Spades shit. That costs like $1,000 a bottle.
And you can do it too if you buy the book.
Yeah. www.crotocanton.com.
What's going to happen when Trump becomes president properly is the price of oil around the world is going to plummet.
A good thing.
And the single biggest thing that's going to boost our economy is the price of fuel plummeting.
Yeah.
And correct. Our economy at that stage, no matter what the government does, is going to prosper as a result.
Spot on. All right, let's end it on that very happy note, because I'm absolutely sure that your words will go straight to God's ears.
We might have to have Kenton back here to talk about
might.
I'm just saying, bookmark that time.
Isn't he a compulsory addition? All right.
Whenever there isn't a school run.
And make sure that you also listen to the Overton pod that these two gentlemen argue.
Oh, and buy my book.
There we go. The last plug. For me, anything you want to plug? Anything that you'd like
Guys,
to just...
I am done with 2024. I hope Shay Shay has... what's his name, back on his podcast at the beginning of January 2025, and they close whatever portal it is that they opened that unleashed the hell that we have had this year. That's all I'm saying.
Well, you know,
say.
We all died in 2013 when they turned on the CERN reactor. So
No. As one of my favorite comedians says, actually, we lost a lot of people in 2020 to COVID, but they're still here.
They are indeed.
All right, but it's 4 years on, and it'll be 2025 before you blink. Thank you for being part of the year's incredible Burning Platform episodes. If you go back and look at some of the things that we've got under the belt in this year, it's been insane and tremendous, and all of the good things.
Tremendous.
Tremendous. We'll end it on that note. Cheers.